This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Hindu's In Focus podcast. I'm Zubeda Hamid, your host for today. From time to time, stories of the commercial dealings in organs or cash for kidney scams surface in the media. In December, one such possible organ racket was in the news, involving people from Myanmar who had come to a private hospital in Delhi for transplant procedures. Organ transplants have been taking place in India since the 1970s, but after multiple instances of the commercial sale of organs coming to light, India brought in the Transplantation of Human Organ and Tissues Act 1994. This law banned the sale of organs and only allowed organs to be donated between close family members or for altruistic reasons with no money exchanging hands. Over the last decade or so, some cities in India have increasingly become major hubs for life-saving transplant surgeries of several organs, including the kidneys, heart, liver, lungs, and pancreas. The deceased donor program, where organs are harvested from brain-dead donors, has also taken off in some parts of the country. As of 2022, India performed just over 13,300 living transplants and about 2,700 deceased donor transplants. And yet, the country still has over 3 lakh patients on the waiting list for organs and 20 people dying each day for want of an organ. How do the transplant laws work, and do they have loopholes that need to be plugged? What are the laws in place for foreigners seeking transplants in India? How can donor rights be protected more stringently to weed out exploitation? And can the transplant program be scaled up to meet the country's needs? We delve into these questions today with Dr. Sunil Shroff, consultant urologist and transplant surgeon based in Chennai and past president of the Indian Society of Organ Transplantation. Good afternoon and welcome to the Hindus in Focus podcast, Dr. Sunil Shroff.
Thank you so much, Zubeda, for inviting me.
Dr. Shroff, there has been yet another case of what may be a cash for organ scam that came out recently in Delhi. Could you talk to us a little bit about the laws that with regard to organ transplants in India?
So, India has a very good law as far as transplants are concerned. I've been in this field for almost 30 years in India, and I have not seen any law other than what we have called the Transplantation of Human Organ Act, which goes into so much of detail to take care of the interest of the donor and to ensure that there is no commercial dealing in organs. The law was passed in 1994 and was further amended in 2011, and the regulations were passed in 2014. The government of India has done on paper an excellent job to, you know, protect the interests of the common man. Having said that, you know, there are ways by which people do, you know, go around the law, and sometimes, you know, they do exploit some few clause in the law, you know, which kind of, you know, makes it sometimes, it's possible that organ commerce may happen without the knowledge of doctors. You know, so that case which you're talking about in Delhi is a case which is related to a foreign donor, not an Indian donor. And I must say that over the last 30 years, I've seen that the number of cases where there has been commercial dealing in organs has come down. And I don't think so. There is much doubt in that, because even if you look at, there is a record which is kept by some department of crime, you know, where they see crime in organ donation, and that number also has significantly come down. So, you know, but now with, you know, sometimes we do have problems with foreign donors, and there are some problems where, you know, where they get clearance from the embassy for a foreigner to donate in India. Before I say that, I must say that no Indian can donate to a foreigner unless there is a relationship. Like, you know, there is a, let's say, somebody overseas who is an Indian origin and has a relative in India. In that situation, if a relationship is established, then it can be done. But otherwise, no foreigner can donate to Indians as it was happening in the past. And that's there in the law. So what happens most of the times is a donor is brought from the home country, And that donor is shown as a relative. And to, for that to pass through, they have to get an embassy certificate. Then there is a relationship and endorsement from the embassy. And after that, they have to go through an authorization committee in India to show that there is a, you know, what we call an affection, an attachment, where, you know, a donor truly wants to donate if they're not first relative. So the case in Delhi is kind of, you know, a little complex. It's not as straightforward as it seems and as it was reported, because, you know, paperwork was, everything was 100% right. But despite that, there was you know, some commercial dealing which was found out later.
Talk to us a little bit about where such loopholes can be plugged. Now, you said very clearly that Indians are not allowed to donate to foreigners unless a relationship exists and, you know, somebody is of Indian origin from abroad, etc. How does this happen? Do people forge documents in order to show that they are related? Is that where things go wrong?
Yes, people do forge documents. You know, sometimes, you know, a woman can be shown as a wife, and, you know, that those things have happened where, you know, they have forged the Aadhaar card, they've forged the numbers, and, you know, then they have duped the authorization committee, and they've gone through by, you know, expressing the donor expresses that, you know, they are truly related, married, or that, you know, and they have their stories right, they do a lot of practice. The touts are very clever at what questions are likely to be asked. So they prime them well, and that's how it goes. But if you look at the, you know, form number 3 of the Transplantation of Human Organ Act of 2014, the form number 3 clearly is, as, you know, spells out the clause in which it actually says that, you know, I know that I'm donating out of true love, and there's no money transaction. Everything is like an affidavit, and the donor has to sign. So what happens is, if something goes wrong, the donor also is equally responsible because they have signed on form number 3, which is like an affidavit. In fact, a case happened in Bombay where everybody, you know, it was found that there was a commercial dealing, and the donor, the recipient, the hospital authorities, the hospital in charge, the surgeon, and everybody went behind bars because of this kind of, you know, the way the forms have been designed. They are like, you know, a final affidavit that, yes, what I'm saying is true. And if this is shown to be false, then you can be punished. And the punishments are very severe in India. It can go up to, you know, 10 years in jail for a doctor, losing your license, up to 1 crore fine. Previously, you know, in 1995, when the law was passed, the punishments were only 20,000 rupees. But now that has been escalated from 20 lakhs to 20 lakhs in kind of minimum, and it can go up to 1 crore rupees. So the law is now gone very stringent. So I think, you know, going, you know, trying to force things and do all this is out of desperation and is risky. And sometimes, you know, people have been in trouble, hospitals have been in trouble for that. And the authorities have acted very, very, very smartly and made sure, you know, that has been stopped.
So, as you said, this entire thing would involve a massive nexus because, as you said, they have to get authorization certificates from the embassy, from the hospitals, from everybody involved. So, where do you think the gaps are in the law, or are there no gaps and people are just sort of using ways and means to get around the law?
So, we are kind of tweaking the law more and more as we go, you know, forward. And now there is another suggestion that we need to further tweak the law. And it's almost 10 years since we had done that. With, you know, first we did in 1995, then again in 2011, and now it's almost 10 years. So we are considering tweaking the law. And one of the suggestions for foreign donors, which has, you know, which is being discussed by us, is rather than getting an embassy to certify, because the embassy is like a rubber stamp, you know, anybody goes to the embassy and they're not bothered. They're not going to do fact checks. They'll just put the stamp and send the donor. So what we think is this should stop at the where the, you know, the donor originates from. And to do that, there needs to be a better kind of understanding in that country about the whole renal transplant program and the ethics of, you know, commercial organ donation. We feel that the doctor in charge or the hospital in charge of that country should also be involved, so that if there is something like this formed, then at least there's an accountability. and somebody is taken to task. Otherwise, what happens is we don't know who to pull up in that country. So that's what is being suggested to add in the law. Because you see, we don't anticipate these kind of situations. Only when you experience, and when there is something like this happens, then you see that there is some flaws in the law, and then you have to change it, you know. Because nobody in advance kind of expects that this could happen. Otherwise, we could have plugged that right when we put the law of 2011 there. So this is being discussed, and hopefully in the next amendment we'll put this in place.
What else, doctor? What are the other recommendations, especially for people in India? Is there some kind of test that you can do to establish that people are actually related, or is there anything else like that that is in the works?
I think, you know, more than anything else, we need to have what we call independent donor advocates in hospitals. And the independent donor advocates should not be part of the hospital. They should be part of a outside body who can take care of donor interests. Where, you know, if there is any problem, the donor can freely express that there is a problem, you know, and they can be explained the risks of donation, especially live donation, be it kidney, liver. So rather than, you know, a doctor doing it or someone, you know, like a nurse doing it or a coordinator doing it, I think that if there is an independent donor advocate, then, you know, it is less biased, the whole information. And if the donor has any apprehensions or fears, they can express. So one of the provisions which should be there should be like in 1995, when the law was passed, we had this transplant coordinator as a special post. And today, 2011 law, a transplant coordinator is a must for a hospital to get license for transplant. Same way for donor protection, I think we need an independent donor advocate. In fact, the Joint Commission of Accreditation of the U.S. has this provision in hospitals doing transplants. But, you know, if this can be created in hospitals, then to some extent, the donor can be better informed than the donor is being informed now. So that is one thing which we can introduce. I think the other thing is, you know, if we want to do the other things besides the living donation, well, at the moment also there is a genetic test of establishing relationship. But that's a little bit, you know, the problem with that sometimes is that it is a little expensive. It adds to the overall cost of the whole procedure. Plus, the access is not there. Not all labs do genetic relationship, but that's getting available more and more. So I think, you know, all donors, maybe that's one thing which we can look at to create a map, you know, family map, and then make sure that they are related. Other than that, there is no foolproof method by which we can establish relationships. So that also can be considered and should be practiced more and more as we go forward. Because, you know, sometimes it so happens that, you know, the blood also, you know, when you send a donor and the recipient to the lab, whose blood is going where, you don't know, unless the transplant coordinator themselves accompanies the donor, you know, and the recipient. What happens is the blood can get swapped. They will give the blood of somebody, you know, who is actually a commercial donor. So those things can also happen. So, you know, all kinds of, you know, ways are there to trick the whole situation and, you know, to game the situation, game the kind of whole process. So we will need to do more and more. The problem is that, you know, hospitals, doctors and nurses are not policemen. And, you know, this is a special kind of training perhaps you need to make them undertake. To look at this relationship business and how to look at flaws. In fact, we published a paper in Indian Journal of Organ Transplantation on this very issue, how to overcome this, you know, kind of how to do paper, verification of documents of the donor and recipient. You know, because if you look at the number of documents which are submitted, there's a huge load of documents submitted. And to verify each and every document is time consuming. And for that, there is a training actually required. So we are trying to, you know, also create such training courses, you know, in a foundation called Mohan Foundation, of which I'm in charge. We already done many courses, online courses in our foundation for transplant coordinators, for grief counseling, for brain death, the law itself. So we are thinking whether we should create a course for document verification as well. And that way what happens is some of the transplant coordinators can get trained. You know, this is like, you know, getting into forensic medicine, to be honest. But if that is to be added as a layer of safety, we'll have to add that as a layer of safety to protect this program.
So, Doctor, this entire problem arises because we still have a huge mismatch, right? As in, the number of people who need organs is far, far, far higher than those the number of organs available for transplants. Talk to us a little bit about the deceased donor program. This, will scaling it up help with the number of organs available for transplants?
So, you know, there is an increasing lifestyle diseases with, you know, sedentary lifestyle, which we have. Alcohol is on the increase. So we do have a higher incidence of diabetes, hypertension, alcoholic liver disease. And that is really, you know, we need to look at prevention in a very big way. We need to change your lifestyle, really, if you want to take care, because these diseases are on the increase. Also, we must remember that in South Asia, the size of our kidney is smaller than what they have in the white population. So we are more prone to kidney disease. 1 in 10, it is estimated, 1 in 10 person in the world will have some problem with the kidney. And that's a huge number. So on one side, we need to look at prevention in a very big way. Early identification of the disease is the next thing which we need to do. If there is, you know, a kidney problem, we need to identify it early. Most of the times now, we are getting patients who are in advanced stages of kidney failure, where the only option is either dialysis or transplantation. So in that situation, you know, what happens is, That kind of increases the burden of the disease. So if we can identify the disease early, then we can certainly postpone the, you know, disease towards end stage, before it reaches the end stage where the options are only transplantation or dialysis. So I think definitely early, you know, we need to do prevention, we need to do early identification, and then we need to scale up our number of donations. India does close to about 16,000 transplants in a year. That includes all kidney, heart, liver, pancreas, intestine, hand. That was the figures last year. Over the last about 8-10 years, our number of transplantations from deceased donors has certainly increased. In 2012, I still remember, we did close to 196 deceased donors in the whole country. In 2023, last year, we did 1,068 donations. Is almost, you know, 5 times that of what we did in 2012. So, but it's not enough. From the 1,068 donors, we had on an average 3.6 organs, which means we had close to about 3,200 or 3,300 organs from them, from these deceased donors, which included 2 kidneys from each donor, 2 lungs, heart, liver, pancreas, intestine, hand, and so on. So we have increased, but that's not enough. There is a, you know, in India, unfortunately, there's a huge, you know, burden of road traffic accidents, and there are a number of young people dying on roads because of the chaotic conditions of the roads. And in these deaths, which happens, you know, if I remember right, 2-3 years back, the number of deaths on road due to road traffic accident was 160,000. And of these, about 60% will have a head injury, which means that potentially we have close to 80,000-90,000 potential brain deaths in this country. Many of these, at the moment, we don't even convert 1% of these brain deaths to actual organ donation. So if we are able to tap into that pool of brain deaths and convert some of them into potential donors, then certainly the 1,068 donations which we did in 2023 can go up to 10,000 or 20,000. And that's not much to, you know, getting that numbers is not very difficult, to be honest, in India. If we do that, we could take care of a substantial number of patients who are waiting on the list. And that desperation, you know, of getting a kidney, not having a donor in the family, with smaller families now, is, you know, very challenging. And in that desperation, you know, sometimes people do things, silly things, and they do try and break the law, go around the law, and do all kinds of, you know, things which gets into them to trouble. So I think the way out is these 3 things which I pointed out: to look at prevention, early identification of kidney disease especially, and then increase the disease donor numbers. At the moment, what's happening is, in our country, there are only 5 or 6 states, mostly South, Maharashtra and Gujarat, which are contributing to the national pool of disease donors. Not much is coming from North. So if of the 37 states and union territories which we have, if all the states and union territories start doing some disease donations, our numbers will increase. Unfortunately, at the moment, that's not happening. So Government of India really needs to try and, you know, help states which have not started disease donation to do that, and to pump in a little bit more in health, generally speaking. While, you know, we spend a lot of money on defense, we spend very little on health, unfortunately. So that shift needs to be done. I think our government GDP has just gone up over 1% on health. The private, you know, players, the total GDP on health may be about 5%, of which 4% may be from private players. So that needs to go up, certainly. If that goes up, you know, then, you know, if the GDP is around 10%, then you'll see that there's a lot of investment in health sector. And you'll see that more and more patients, not only for transplants, but other diseases also will get helped.
Talk to us a little bit, Doctor. You just said that, you know, only a few states, mostly in the South plus Maharashtra, Gujarat, are contributing to the deceased donor pool. The Indian government has now adopted the One Nation, One Policy approach for organ donations and transplants. What does this mean?
We are a big country, and, you know, when we talk One Nation, One Policy, at the moment also we have almost the same policy as far as organ sharing is concerned. So the One Nation, One Policy is about organ sharing. And the way we share organs mostly is that if there is a donation happening in a hospital, one kidney, because we have two kidneys, one kidney will stay in the hospital where the retrieval takes place, and one kidney goes to the common. And that kidney in the common pool will be given to that, first priority is given to the person from, you know, that state. And if there is no, you know, recipient available in that state, then the neighboring state gets a priority. And if the neighboring state doesn't have, then the country gets the priority. So that is already in place. The same situation is with liver, heart, and other organs. So that way, One Nation, One Policy is already there. The question is, how do you implement it? So if you have a patient, let's say, in Imphal, and you have a donor in Chennai. So in Imphal to Chennai, if you look at the logistics of flight connections and travel and so on, to fly an organ from Imphal to Chennai or Chennai to Imphal is going to take a long time, or you may not have a connection unless you take a, you know, private airline. And private airlines are very expensive. So the cost logistics, the transport logistics will always be not in favor of this One Nation, One Policy, whatever we do. While broadly we do the same thing, but sharing of organs for an organ to fly from one region to another region may not be easy, because with the distance between two regions could be as much as 2,500 to 3,000 kilometers. And, you know, if that travel takes place, then what happens is these organs are critical as far as the time is concerned. Like heart needs to be taken out and transplanted within 4 to 6 hours. So it is with lungs. The liver only has 12 hours of ischemia time. You can't kind of take out organs and store them. Kidney has a little longer ischemia time. But since kidney waiting list is long, kidney is usually utilized in the same state. It never goes out of the state. Usually it's the liver, heart, lungs which go out of the state. But what is happening is with the programs maturing in many of these states, south, most of the heart, lung, liver remain in the same state. They don't go to the nation. So that way what happens is in the southeast kind of, you know, getting more organs, in fact, from other parts of the country, because the programs in other parts of the country have not matured to start doing heart, lung, liver so often compared to what south is doing. So I think, you know, once a program matures in various states of the country, I think, you know, the most of the organs will stay in one place. And the idea of One Nation, One Policy is not to waste organs. And that is absolutely understandable that we should not waste organs, because organs are a national resource. That is for sure. So in principle, absolutely we should try and follow. But practically, sometimes the transport logistics may be challenging.
That makes it very clear. Thanks, Doctor. Just a couple more questions. Going back a little bit to living donations, statistics have generally found that it's all skewed towards women. About 70% of all the donors are female. Talk to us a little bit about this.
That's the unfortunate reality of this world. Not only in India, it's there all over the world. Whether it is the mindset, whether it is, you know, women giving more compared to men, the psychological aspect. Generally, women are giving are perhaps more giving than men. I don't know the right answer to that. Is it a psychological factor? But in India, mostly the breadwinners are men. So it was felt that, you know, rather than a man donating, it should be women donating. I want to tell you, Zubeda, that, you know, somewhere up there, you know, in the heaven, God is looking at all this. And what he's done is, the disease donor are mostly men. Most men die in road traffic accidents. So the disease donors are mostly men, the living donors are mostly women. I don't know if that justifies the whole situation, but that's what is happening at the moment. 70% of men are donating, or maybe even more, as disease donors, and 70% of women in living donations are donating. So that is how it is at the moment. I think there is a gender disparity. What is not happening necessarily is 70% men are donating in disease donation, but not necessarily 70% of women are getting that organs. So that's the thing. We need to, the recipient kind of thing needs to be improved. If women are donating, they should also receive the organs. That's not happening. So that's the other side of the picture, that they are donating, but the women should receive. That's where I think we should try and address it, that we should try and get more women, more children to get transplants. And that way what happens, there'll be some kind of justification in this equity imbalance.
So some transplant ethicists have argued the case for paying for organ donations. Has this system ever worked in any other country? And if it has, what have the outcomes been like for the donors?
So this has been debated since ever, you know, we have had organ transplants. Because you have two kidneys, and you know, unfortunately, the problem started. You know, they always say one to care and one to spare. And what has been happening is that, you know, many people think that donating a kidney and getting some money is the way out of this whole their problem with finances. Most studies which have been done worldwide, whether it's in India or in the Philippines or Egypt, have found that donors who have donated out of money have had a poor quality of life, but the feel-good factor is not there. And many of them have said that, you know, they will not do it again. And many also have been found to be back into poverty after the money is exhausted very quickly. Many of them, you know, donate because they have some loan to be paid back, or there's a marriage happening in the family and they need to fund that. So what happens is, this is short term, it helps them to get some money, but in long term, it doesn't change. And also the compensation they get for an organ is very minimum. Maximum, they'll get a lakh, 2 lakhs for a kidney. A kidney's value, when we calculated versus dialysis, was estimated to be, you know, even if it was estimated to be close to 4 crores. If somebody, you know, has, you know, pays 2,000 rupees for dialysis 3 times a week, you know, 4 weeks in a month, let's say, and 12 months in a year, and for 10 years, if you have that, if you calculate that and permute it, it is 87,000 hours of dialysis. And that cost of that dialysis alone will come to about 4 crores. So the true value of a kidney, if you put in marketplace, should be somewhere around 4 to 5 crores. So you put that value to the kidney and go for, you know, asking people to donate or for money, no problem. You know, people may come forward and they may get enough compensation to take care of their life. But for this, you know, small amount of money, like 10, you know, a lakh or 2 lakhs or 3 lakhs, donating a kidney and getting exploited is not the way forward. Either you put the right price to the kidney and say, okay, this is the price and this is where, you know, you can buy a kidney. Otherwise, don't even talk about it. Having, you asked me about if this experiment has worked in any other country. It has not worked in any country. Iran tried this experiment in which, you know, the donor would get about, you know, some money for $2,000. And then again, they had the same problem. In fact, now Iran is doing more disease donation. So slowly, this whole paid donation program has getting wiped away from Iran. In fact, it's so much so that previously, you know, the Iranians were donating only in Iran. Now, because the disease donation numbers have gone up in Iran, and they don't have an opportunity to donate, the waiting list is much shorter. They are going out of Iran to places like Turkey and all and donating their kidney for money. So, you know, that's what is happening. So there is always going to be, if there is poverty, there is always going to be exploitation. whether it is to whether it's in the field of organ donation or kidney donation, or whether it is in the field of child labor or prostitution, there's always going to be exploitation. And that's not the way forward in kidney donation.
Thank you so much for speaking to us today, Dr. Shrav.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.